People sometimes ask me if I became the Ron Van Dam Show announcer because I love what Ron does and I love his comedy. Well, no. It's because Ron broke me out of a Tijuana prison back in 82 and smuggled me across the border in a suitcase and a trunk of a Yugo. And I still owe him for that. Muchas gracias, mi amigo. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Here I am, watch out.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Back away from the speaker, you're a little too close. I'm getting uncomfortable. No reason you have to be that close to the speaker. Just back it up a little bit. Turn a little bit louder if you can't hear. Just don't get away from me. Let's make believe we have COVID and you can't touch me and you can't come close to me. Let's do that. Let's make believe that I have a restraining order against you. Let's play that game. It's not that I don't like people, it's that people don't seem to be right for me for some reason. I like animals. I do. You know, you pet them, they'll pet you back. I like that. People, not so much. People are fine for a short period of time. But after a while, it's okay, that's enough. The other problem is there seems to be people all over the place. Have you noticed that? I mean, there's not many places you can go where there's not people anymore. They're all over the place. It's like cockroaches. It's not nice. I like people when they perform a function or a task. For example, if you have a question and you ask another person the question and they answer you, okay, that's fine. But then, all right, it's over. Go away now. When I drive, it's like there's so many cars on the road. You know why there's so many cars on the road? Because there's too many people. There's just too many people. Spread it out, baby. Spread it out. This is a large country in the Midwest. You can drive for miles and not see another person. Just cornfields and wheat and stuff like that. So why doesn't everybody just move to the Midwest and just spread it out, man? It's like sitting in a restaurant, you know. I'm the only person sitting at the bar or at a table or something. And another customer comes in, and they sit like right next to me. Look, what are you doing? It's a huge restaurant. All the other seats are empty. Why are you sitting next to me? That's what it's like. Why is my voice so high? It's very, very frustrating. Too many people. It's a lot of people. The population of the world grows by a lot every single year. Everything's growing every single year. It's the hottest year on record. The oceans have risen to their highest level since we've been taking records. And these are the most people, and this is the biggest problem, and this is the most we've ever had of this, and it's the most rain we've had in one month, and it's a... Stop it. Stop it with the most things. You're freaking me out. And it's all because of people. It's all the people. You know that good against evil thing? You know, it was even in the Bible, they did a lot of good against evil kind of stuff. The good against evil competition, that kind of thing. Now it's like good against evil, and evil seems to be creeping up. You know, the race for goodness, This is evil's, the number, evil's numbers are getting better, and good's numbers are starting to dip. It's not the way. Good is supposed to outpower evil every time. Now, I don't know. That's not good either. That's not good. Not good. We got to turn this around, man. We really do. We have to have respect for each other, stop all these wars, get the climate under control. It's time to do that. It's time to stop sitting there watching TV and playing with your games. Let's do something that makes sense. Do something that's good for everybody. Stop trying to find the differences and start trying to find the similarities. I don't know. I should have been Pope, but I'm too lazy. Again, the only good thing about being the Pope is you don't have to lay out your clothes the day before and think about what am I going to wear tomorrow. Pope doesn't have to do that. First of all, because the Pope wears the same thing every day. And also, he's got people that lay the clothes out for him. He doesn't have to worry about that. You know, he just gets up, puts on whatever they laid out for him, steps out on the balcony and tells everybody what he thinks and goes back in. After that, I don't know what he does. His breakfast? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Pope's got people. He's got people. Believe me, if the Pope's people are not doing a good job or are annoying him, he will let them go. He will let his people go. Let my people go. Who said that? Moses? I don't know. Moses was a little weird. He really was. The guy went hiking one day, and he comes across a burning bush. Now, that's very possible because it was very hot. It was the hottest day ever. The warmest day on record when Moses was alive. And he was walking around. He was hiking, and a bush caught fire. I mean, so, you know, probably some disciple flicked their cigarette butt into the bush, and it caught fire, which happens in the desert. And, you know, bushes catch fire every once in a while. Spontaneous combustion, especially back in the biblical days, that was more possible. Because things happened back then, apparently, that they don't happen anymore. Seas part, water turns into wine. That used to be normal stuff back then. It was like miracle land. So Moses is walking around, wearing sandals, and one of the bushes is on fire. And Moses looks down and starts speaking to the bush. Thinks he's talking to God. Now, I mean, possible, I guess. But at the same time, you have to question Moses's. Oh, how can you do that? What's the possessive of Moses? Moses's. That doesn't sound right. You have to question Moses's mental capacity there, speaking to a bush that's burning and thinking it's God. I mean, I believe that's how the story goes. I don't know. I'm not sure. There are a lot of biblical stories where incredible things happened. They don't seem to happen anymore. I mean, when's the last miracle you saw? It's a miracle. I found my keys. I lost my keys. It's a miracle. I found them. No, it's not a miracle. That's not a miracle. But back then, they were happening all the time. When there was a miracle, people would say to each other, oh, big deal. It's another miracle. Another one. Now, you know, you can't... Crazy if you can find a miracle, you know? All right. I have a guest on today's program, but first, before I turn to my guest, and I would turn to my guest at this point, we do have a commercial break. We'll be right back right after this.
First, they put jalapenos on your hamburger, but that wasn't hot enough. Then came habaneros, but still, that wasn't hot enough. Next came the ghost pepper, and still that was not hot enough for you. Well, buckle up, tough guy, because Burger Guy thinks you're not man enough to handle the heat of our new sweet flaming mother of heaven. What the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger? featuring two of Burger Guy's signature paper-thin patties topped with an experimental hot sauce made from a concentrated hot pepper extract that has only been approved for military use by North Korea. This burger will burn a hole through every inch of your intestines and then slap your mama on its way out for good measure. This burger is so hot they wouldn't let us test it on prisoners. Death row prisoners. But for a limited time, you can try your luck at your local Burger Guy if you're not a complete pussy.
All purchases of the sweet flaming mother of heaven, what the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger, must be pre-approved by a certified attorney at law with proper notification of next of kin. Sweet flaming mother of heaven, what the f*** did you assholes do to my hamburger burger must not be consumed within 500 yards of schools or within 1,000 yards of open flame. All Burger Guy franchisees reserve the right to ignore cries for mercy or requests for immediate medical attention.
Ron Felber joins us now. He's a great guest. We've had him on before. He's an author and so many other things. And he's written another book, my God, and this one, it's fantastic. It's called The Unwelcomed, The Curious Case of Clara Fowler. And thanks for being with us, Ron.
My pleasure, Ron. Always a pleasure.
This one is special. Where did you get the inspiration to write this particular book?
You know, it's a great little story in the sense I was a student at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. back in 1972. I was a sophomore when they were filming The Exorcist. And so William Peter Blatty, and William Friedkin, who was the director, you know, had all the stage set up, fog machines, and, you know, police had cordoned off areas of it. But I was a writer even then, and I had published a number of short stories, and I had my first novel, the first novel I'd ever written, loaded with typos and, you know, not in the best shape, but yeah. But as best I could do at the tender age of 18. And so 18. I petitioned to try to see Blatty, but I couldn't. But I did get to see his secretary at the Key Bridge Marriott across the Potomac from Georgetown. And she was kind enough to hand it over to him. He gave me a call over Thanksgiving vacation. We met. He didn't help me publish the book that I had written, the first book. It just wasn't good enough.
Right.
But he did give me the idea for this story, The Unwelcomed, based on a true case of demonic possession that happened from 1898 to 1904 in Boston and studied by some of the premier physicians and scientists of the day.
Wow. And it's one of the scariest stories I've read that you came across.
Yeah, actually, some of the reviews are interesting. You know, it should be read with an open mind and all the lights on in the house. My wife read the one of the first versions and didn't sleep for three nights. So I guess you could say it's a little scary.
Yeah. It's very interesting. In a second, we'll get into how it sparks people's thought process to read this book as well. It does a lot of things. I want to talk about first about your authorship. I don't know what the word is. you've written quite a few pieces in your time.
Yeah, you know, really, I think in a way, I'm a sort of testimony to the impact that teachers have on young kids. When I was in the sixth grade, I had a teacher. I remember her name. It was Miss Dorsey. And we had essays that we were doing, you know, like you do in the sixth grade, you know, your summer vacation, what did you do, who's your favorite hero or whatever. So I chose Willie Mays, the baseball player. And I wrote an essay, and she said, you know, she came around to my desk, I remember it vividly, and said, you know, this isn't the best essay, but it's the most unique essay. You have a perspective that's very different from other people, and I encourage you to be a writer.
Wow.
And that's how my writing career started, actually. You know, I started writing short stories in grammar school. My brother was a high school student, and I would hand him the stories, and he would get them published in the high school magazine. So, you know, so that's pretty much the beginning of how I started to write.
Yeah, I mean, you've written for a True Detective magazine, The Runaway, which award-winning for fiction. The Mojave Desert. Some of that was an incredible book. We talked about that last time. That was about the alien situation, and I'm not talking about Mexico either. So that was, and then some. So it's quite a bit. Lately, it seems that you've been looking at subjects that are a little bit quote unquote out of this world.
Yeah, you know, I think what happened when I wrote the Mojave Incident, which was based on a true story of alien abduction, I really got sort of involved in the paranormal, which wasn't something I had my eye on in the beginning. But between Mojave Incident and now The Unwelcomed, which is about demonic possession and spiritualism, the battle kind of that goes on between science and maybe the paranormal, although they're coming together, I became fascinated with situations that point to the reality of a spiritual world.
Yeah, it is fascinating because you're looking at things that we just really can't explain, to be honest with you. So so when you open up that facet of the mind, then you can go anywhere with that.
Well, actually, there's a little dialogue from the book that actually it all comes from transcripts. Uh-huh. You know, from this case history that came from the Harvard Medical School Library. Everybody that studied Clara Fowler, three out of the five were Harvard Medical School graduates and practitioners. But there's an argument that goes on between Richard Hogson, who's a spiritualist and part of the team studying her, and Dr. Morton Prince, who's the primary physician. And basically, Hogson pleads, he says, "Don't you see, Morton, can you not bring yourself to understand the great mystery we stand on the threshold of solving? I beg you, consider at least the possibility that here at last, in the city of Boston, 1898, is tangible evidence of transcendence. If there are demons, there must be angels, and probably a God and life everlasting." Hmm. You ask, where are the doctors and clinicians? Dr. Prince, we are the doctors, we are the clinicians. And so that's really, in large measure, what the story is about. It's a frightening story, and the symptoms this woman displays, and ultimately she was cured. But also, it's kind of a test between two points of view. One about spiritualism and the reality of a spiritual world, and then a materialist who is Dr. Morton Prince, a behavioralist psychotherapist who believes that everything can be traced down to something like a chemical imbalance in the brain or a brain lesion, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it is definitely two schools, and one of the schools is quite been around for a while. What I got out of it was a good against evil. Whenever you introduce the devil, we've already introduced God into things, but when you introduce the devil, it becomes apparent that you've got good and evil, and if you have good, then you got to have evil, and if you have evil, you got to have good, and. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the way society kind of is now in the minds of most people? You're evil, I'm good, and never the twain shall meet, and I'll destroy you. I mean, it's interesting how things are kind of coming around, even in the human aspect, and that's what that book brought out for me.
Yeah, well, you know, I do believe that, and I think the doctor himself, this woman, Clara Fowler, was a Radcliffe College student, who's 22. And came to him with this host of incredible phenomenon. For example, in this demonic state, her voice would change to this gruff bass, exploding sort of voice. Her face would actually remold. She could speak in languages that she had no knowledge of, Greek, Latin. Tremendous strength. She had went into unbridled rages of, you know, when she saw religious articles, a Bible, rosary, a priest. And William James, the famous William James, who was introduced abnormal psychology to Harvard Medical School, was the first to lecture on the subject and teach courses on it, really studied this demonic presence and found some interesting things. It had no pain. It felt no pain when she was in this state. No need for food, no need for sleep. had no illness, was not subject to illness, no fatigue, was awake 24/7. So this demonic presence knew every thought, every inkling of a desire that this woman, Clara Fowler, had. Now, from Clara Fowler's standpoint, in the original state, she wanted to be a nun. She was studying at Radcliffe, but ultimately she wanted to be a nun. And she, Prince called one the demon and one the saint. And the reason he called the first Clara Fowler, the real Clara Fowler, the saint, was because she had visitations from Jesus Christ and from the Virgin Mary, and was, very, very religious. So this, I guess, became a perfect target for this demonic presence.
Wow. Would you categorize this book as a documentary or as a novel?
I tried to write it when I first got the story, which was many years ago. I say this story was 50 years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to write it, but, at 18, 19, I was just not good enough to write a story that goes back to the turn of the century. It's pretty easy, or much easier, to write a story that's set in current times,
mm-hmm.
because you know what cars people drive, you
right.
know what, the fashions are, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But go back to 1898, now you have a lot of research to do to be able to set things. And the characters, Sigmund Freud, for example, is a character. So I tried to write it as a documentary, and it became more like a textbook. And I mm-hmm. didn't really want that, because it didn't convey the terror
right.
that this story actually represented and what this woman went through.
Right.
So much later, which would be about 3 years ago, I said, I have all the research, I have all the letters, I have all the transcripts. Let me take another shot at this. And I wrote it in a novelistic way. So I would say it's a novel based on a true mm-hmm. story.
Okay. But it puts you there, and it's based on a true story, and so it is kind of true.
Yeah. Actually, most of the dialogue between Prince, the doctor, and Clara Fowler, his patient, almost all of it comes from transcripts.
Oh.
All I did was modernize it.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, language back in the 1900s was slightly different,
yeah.
and it was just awkward. So I modernized it a little bit, but by and large, it comes from transcripts.
Wow. All right, here's the magic question. I probably asked you this before. When's the movie coming out?
I don't know. When I write, I try to write in a visual way. I teach writing these days at Drew University in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
And, one of the things I tell my students is that, when you're writing a book, it should be like a film in your head.
Yes.
So that the reader follows along and there's a pace to it.
Yes.
And there's a momentum, a forward motion.
Yes.
And so I write things that are cinematic, let's say. So I'm hopeful. We'll see.
Yeah. Because as you described it, it is, I was watching it in my head. So I... Why not put it on the screen?
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah. I mean, because this is ripe for it, to be honest with you. The Exorcist certainly did quite well.
Oh, that's for sure. I think it's still one of the all-time biggest grossing films, and I guess there were two or three sequels to it, one of which, Exorcist 3, was very, very good.
Yeah, it is. Although it also tells you, make the first one, and that's it. Sometimes sequels, like Godfather, did pretty good on a sequel, but still nothing like the concept in the beginning. Anyway, it's pretty. I remember seeing The Exorcist, and it actually scared the hell out of me. And now movies are more graphic, and they don't scare me as much as that did way back then.
Maybe that's the reason. Maybe they are so graphic that really it leaves nothing to the imagination.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, there have been a ton of science fiction films, but 2001 Space Odyssey, nothing tops that for me. Anyway, so... This is a book that everybody should read. Perhaps not with the lights off, as you say, but it is a really, really powerful piece. It's available everywhere. Has it been released?
It's available for pre-order on Amazon mm-hmm. and Barnes & Noble and anywhere else that you want to order it. It'll be distributed in May
mm-hmm.
Next month, but it's available right now for pre-order. And mm-hmm. From my standpoint, it's important to get pre-orders because that's how many it affects the number of books that are printed and distributed. So pre-orders are very important.
Okay. And now the question that I asked you before, and you somewhat answered it the last time we talked, are you working on anything else? It's been about a 3-year gap between the two, I would suppose.
You know, let's see. I don't want to make it too long, but I'll tell you quick version.
Go on.
So I got involved with the Mojave incident, of course, about alien abductions and whatnot.
Right.
And it turns out, and there's a chain of events that preceded all this, but I was watching a documentary on alien abduction, and this fellow came forward, and military guy, and said that he had been abducted, and actually in his knee he had a kind of implant. And so they tested it and said some radio waves were coming, and it was magnetic, so they could prove that it was there beside just the x-ray. And oddly enough, I had had two surgeries on my knee, and one was quite a number of years ago. And then one was about 4 years ago, just a meniscus thing. So they took an x-ray, and after the surgery was over, the doctor came up to me and said, I want to show you something. I said, all right. And he showed me an x-ray of my knee, and below the kneecap was a sort of an arrow object about the size of the nail on your pinky. And it's metal. So he said, you have something lodged in your knee. And I tried to get it out, you know, while I was doing the surgery and fish around for it, but I couldn't get it out. So I just want to let you know you have that. I said, well, is this dangerous? Is it going to get infected? He said, well, you've had it for, you know, 15 years or something, so I don't think that it's a problem. I just thought you'd like to know. And it occurred to me, let me get retrogressed to a dream that I had a number of years. It was very, very vivid about aliens and a UFO.
Implant.
So I'm going to be retrogressed. We'll get another x-ray. And if the retrogression shows that there was something extraordinary that happened the night of my dream, I'll have it removed. I'll have a surgeon remove that. And I think the book will be called Truth.
Wow. Holy crap.
Yeah, I know. My wife says the same thing.
Yeah. But at least a good novel, no matter what it may be.
That's right. We look high and low for a good story.
Yeah. My God. Wow. All right. Odd that would happen to you.
Well, you know, there's so many coincidences involved in that that, you know, like I said, I won't get into, but just the fact that I got the story for the Mojave incident was a great coincidence.
Yeah.
Somebody that worked for me, played football in college with a fellow that was an all-league football player. Didn't want to talk about it. I was in New York. They were in Los Angeles. So I made the trip, even though I didn't want to, met them, and so the Mojave incident happened. So there are just a number of coincidences, and I figured, you know, let's research this a little bit. I mean, I certainly researched other people's story. Let me research my story.
Wow. Okay, now I can't wait for the next one. Oh, my God. You got to stop this. Oh my God. Okay. But right now, the book is available, at least for pre-order. It's called The Unwelcomed. The Unwelcomed, The Curious Case of Clara Fowler. And it's fascinating. Is there a website that supports the information?
Yeah. Actually, it's very simple. It's just ronfelber, F-E-L-B-E-R, .com.
Perfect.
Nice and easy.
Yeah, and you can also get information on the other books, and it's like going to the Ron Felber Library.
Yeah, I've got to stop this. You're right. Yeah.
Try golf or something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Get a hobby.
I'll talk to you the next time.
It's always a pleasure. You're great.
It's fun. And everybody, go to that website and get into the Ron Felber thing. Hey, it's a pleasure. We'll talk again soon. All right. Well, thank you to my guest, and thank you to you for being here. You're one of the good people. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program, but until that time arrives, I wish you peace.